compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We have a really big show for you today. I can't do the Ed Sullivan. We have a big show for you today, but we always have a big show for you today here at the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you for tuning in. Happy Taco Tuesday. The number to dial is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Let's start on the phones today. Let's go to Gracie in El Paso. Good morning, Gracie.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Hi, I'm just trying to take you off the speaker. Patrick, I was, this Sunday I went to church, and I'm here in El Paso. The last time I called you from Yuma. But this church was telling me that the priest was saying that anybody could take the Eucharist. That he said it in these words. He said, people that don't believe in pro-life could take the Eucharist. And I felt like I don't know, I felt like it wasn't true, because I don't know too much about, you know, the rules on it. But after I told the deacon... Mm-hmm. And the deacon said, well, he is right, and because he's not committing it. He's not committing the sin. But I go, but he's advocating for it. What if he takes his daughter to go, you know, abort her baby, and then he could still go to church and take the Eucharist? That does not make any sense to me. Mm-hmm. I go, then, to me, if you're saying that, then confirmation doesn't make any sense. Catechism doesn't make any sense. Baptism doesn't make any sense. You know, because the Eucharist is, you know, we have to be at least... to our knowledge, you know, worthy of it, right?
Well, St. Paul says so in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. He says that if you are, and I'm paraphrasing here, he says that if you are unworthy, then do not receive communion. He doesn't use the word communion, but he's referring to the Lord's Supper. And he says, if you do so and you're unworthy, then you are guilty of the body and the blood of the Lord. That's a euphemism for murder. You have blood on your hands, in other words. And then he says in the next breath, he says, if you do not discern or recognize the body, that includes recognizing the real presence of Christ, that you eat and drink damnation unto yourself. Many translations would say judgment, but that's just a euphemism for damnation. So it's a very stern warning, and the church has always regarded that to be the rule when it comes to those on the one hand, who are aware of being in the state of mortal sin, or those who are outside the church. Now, there are a few very rare circumstances where the church foresees a scenario where somebody might be permitted to receive communion who was not a member of the church, but certainly not if you're aware of being in the state of mortal sin. So that has always been the church's teaching on this issue, and the church's law, for that matter, reflects that teaching. So to give you an example of that, the canon in the church's canon law that most closely discusses that is canon 915. And it points out that as a general rule, you know, if somebody comes forward to receive Holy Communion, he should be permitted to receive Holy Communion. But there are certain groups of people who are specifically singled out, and it says that under these circumstances, these people are not to receive Holy Communion. So these would be people who are not prepared to receive Holy Communion. And it would refer to those who have been excommunicated. It refers also to people who are involved in some grave, manifest sin that they're obstinately persisting in. And I think that clearly identifies a pro-abortion politician who says, I'm Catholic, but I'm going to do everything I can to promote the evil of abortion. That is a scandal. It is grave. It is manifest. In other words, it's a public thing. It's not as though it's something between him and God. It's like as if it were a secret sin. It's not a secret sin. It's a public sin, etc. So the church's law specifically says that people in those situations are to be refused Holy Communion. So the good deacon and the parish priest, I'm afraid, either are ignorant of this, or they may know it, but they prefer their own view of things over what the church teaches on this issue. So in a nutshell, that's what you're dealing with there, is a departure from what the church is.
Yeah, thank you for telling me that, because my brothers attacked me afterwards. And I've been actually...
Attacked you for what? What did they attack you for, Gracie?
Excuse me? Because...
You said you're... I'm sorry.
I was, you know, telling him, you know, I got a little nervous. Like, I guess I got a little bit of aggressive, you know, because I've been doing a lot of things for pro-life, and then I go to church and they, you know, they're making it harder on me. Plus, my brothers are going to church, and, you know, I just convinced them to go to church and to get closer to the church. But now they're saying that, and now they're against me, so I have to fight that part. And I go, am I wrong? So I have to call Patrick.
You're not wrong. No, you're not wrong.
Yeah, I've been traveling for these 3 months from Alaska. These 3 months I've been in Alaska.
But let me, Grace, let's get back to the issue. You're not in the wrong, number one. Second thing is there's something else that you can add to this conversation that I think will help you. If you get into this conversation again, let's say with the deacon or with the priest, first of all, you know that the church's canon law specifically says what I just mentioned to you. But ask this question. If let's say that somebody came to Mass dressed in a Ku Klux Klan outfit, the robe and the hood and whatever other regalia, and wearing the Ku Klux Klan, obviously racist getup, what if that person came forward to receive Holy Communion? Ask the deacon, would you give that person Holy Communion? I'm sure he, maybe to try to make a point, he will say, well, yes, I guess I would. So in other words, you could say, so what message is it sending to people if you gave somebody dressed up in a KKK hood and robe, which is clearly a symbol of racism, etc. If you say, well, okay, not you personally, but him, if you say, well, I don't know what's in his heart, and maybe he's repented, and who am I to judge, and I give him Holy Communion, you could say, all right, well, what message do you think that sends to everybody who's in the church that day? It clearly will send the message that you think it's okay for somebody who's all about racism to receive Holy Communion. Now, I'm guessing he'll probably say, well, that's different. I wouldn't do it in that case. In which case, you basically have got him where you want him, because you point out that even you are willing to admit that there are some things that you would say that crosses the line, and I'm not going to give someone Holy Communion because this is a public declaration. Who knows what's going on in his heart, but publicly, by virtue of wearing this outfit, he's publicly proclaiming that he is in league with racism. Why would you give him Holy Communion? And what message do you think that would send? So that's what I would recommend, Gracie. You know, don't allow yourself to be on the defensive. That's where they want you to be. I'm talking about your brothers, I guess. And say, hey, guys, I thought you loved me. I thought we were family. Why are you attacking me for something that you know deep down inside is true? I mean, maybe if you've been politicized to think otherwise, what can I tell you? But you and I both know that this is what the Catholic Church has always taught. And you can crack open 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and read what St. Paul says and say, you know, you're not really arguing with me. You're arguing with the church and you're arguing with St. Paul. Ultimately, you're arguing with Jesus, because Jesus said about the bishops, the apostles, beginning with them, he who listens to you listens to me. He who rejects you rejects me. And if the apostles from St. Paul forward and the church from that point forward regarded this to be a severe sin to receive communion while you knowingly were in the state of mortal sin, not to mention the case of grave public scandal and obstinate persistence in that sin on the part of a public person, you're really arguing with Jesus, because he said, he who listens to you listens to me, he who rejects you rejects me. You're rejecting Jesus by arguing this way. I think it's a very simple equation. So try that on for size, Gracie, and maybe call me back in a few months and let me know how it goes. But hang in there. Hang in there. I wish you well. 888-914-9149. That's the number to dial to be on the program. Now, we've got stuff to get into this morning. Cyrus, you and I, we've got some audio that I want to get to. And why don't we start with the audio from my home state of California. I don't live in California anymore, but I am a proud native Californian, lived most of my life there, born and raised, my wife too. And it pains me to see what California has become and is becoming in recent years. And I will pin that on, at least for the moment, on the current occupant of the governor's mansion, Governor Newsom. So we have some audio, Cyrus. The first audio, all of these audios have to do with Governor Newsom's making a vow that California will have the strongest vaccine verification system in the U.S., which he is mandating. And I have an article here from Business Insider that gets into this. Cyrus, why don't you set up the in order of the three audios that we're going to listen to, the first one and what we'll hear in the second, what we'll hear in the third one.
All right. So we're going to start off here with Newsom talking about how the mandated vaccination, you'll need to have mandated vaccination proof. You'll have to carry it around with you on your ID. Not carrying it around is basically the equivalent of drunk driving, I think.
Drunk driving.
And yeah. And he also is talking about how if you don't have that, you can count on being tested for COVID at least once a week, and he's hoping even more than that. So let's
and most likely at your own expense if they have their way.
Mm-hmm.
So let's listen to the first audio. This is him where he's referring to, and this was an interview on MSNBC, and he's being interviewed talking about what he's ramping up for California for those who are not vaccinated yet. Here's what he said.
What's pushing you to require state employees to show proof of vaccination now? And just logistically, how does this work? Do you have any privacy concerns?
Well, 246,000 state employees will be directly requested, in fact, required to provide verification of being vaccinated. If they are not vaccinated, they'll be required to submit to testing. What's significant about this announcement is it moves beyond just state employees. It also goes to the public and private healthcare system. We have some of the largest employers in the state of California that joined this and are aligning with the state requirement in terms of vaccine verification and or testing. And the answer to your question of why now, it's pretty self-evident. We went from 0.7%, the lowest positivity rate in America, just a handful of weeks ago, now to 5.3% positivity. We're seeing the number of people in hospitals increase from 900 to just over 3,000 today. And as was just stated, this is the summer. This is when COVID survives, and into the fall it begins to thrive. We want to get ahead of that curve.
And just to put a button on it, sir, how logistically will it work? How will the state verify the vaccination records of these employees and healthcare workers?
We have the capacity to the database to do that. We will guarantee people's privacy. Their personal information is not shared at all. The verification process could be an actual card, but we've also digitized that process as well for ease of use. And as a consequence of those that are still teleworking, they'll be exempted for the moment. And as the workforce comes back, we'll begin the process. So the logistics may be challenging. Of course, that's why we have an implementation starting next Monday, August 2nd. 9th to the 23rd. So there's a multi-week application implementation.
Okay. So why now, he's being asked. I'd like to add what I think is part of an answer. Why now? Because he's facing a recall election. Because people are so ticked off with what a bungling job he's done, at least in the eyes of many people. And there's a few other dimensions of this, but I think the why now question is broader than what he said. So we'll move on to the next clip. Cyrus, tell us about this clip.
All right. This time he's being asked, why can't we just wait till there's FDA approval? You know, this is kind of still in the test phase. Mm-hmm. This vaccine has not been FDA approved.
Okay. Before we continue, forgive my interruption. I want to just put a little public service announcement here. None of this is intended to tell anybody not to get a vaccine. Okay. This is intended to show what the government, in this case, in the state of California, intends to do with people who, for whatever their reasons are, have not been vaccinated. So please do not misinterpret what we're doing here. We're not playing Governor Newsom's comments to say, hey, look, don't get a vaccine. You know, we've said that like a billion times. That's not what we're saying here.
Yeah, this is all leading somewhere. So hang with us and you will see.
Yes.
You're probably aware the Military Times reported that the Pentagon is waiting for a full FDA approval before requiring the shot for service members. Why not wait until the FDA gives the vaccines full approval before you mandate it in your state for your workers?
We don't want to go back to where we were this fall. We don't want to wait till we're overwhelmed in our ICUs. We don't want to wait till thousands and thousands of more Californians die of a virus where they simply can save their lives by getting a simple vaccine shot. You got 25%. You noted 75% of Californians have received at least one dose, but 25% of people are choosing to live with this virus. You can't choose to drive drunk. You put your life at risk. You put other lives at risk. At the end of the day, we've got to be a little bit more assertive to help people get this disease behind us, to help society ultimately end this pandemic. The end of the day, this is the remarkable thing. We have the one thing the rest of the world's desperate for, and that's ubiquity and abundance and access of a life-saving drug. We can end this pandemic in a matter of weeks and months. It's a question of choice. It's a question of decision, and we want to encourage that. And we certainly believe in, well, leading by example as state employees, as the largest employer in California, it's time.
Okay, do you see what he's doing here? He's equating people, and maybe you're one of them, who has decided not to get a vaccine for whatever reason. He's equating you with drunk driving. He's in essence saying that you are the moral equivalent of a drunk driver. Because like drunk drivers, you can't just go out and decide you want to drive drunk under the influence. And in the same way, you can't really decide that you don't want a vaccine. So this is one of the little pieces here I'd like to draw to your attention. Remember, I mentioned yesterday about how this is trending in the direction now of, you can sense the palpable frustration that many in the media and in government feel that there are just some people who won't get with the program. And they are frustrated and they're angry and they're becoming coercive. I see this as a kind of prelude to what could easily become the scapegoating of people who decide not to get vaccinated. And if they're scapegoated for that, it may be that the ire of the public can be so whipped into a frenzy that who knows what could happen in a situation like that. So here we see a little piece of this mosaic with him equating you, if you have not been vaccinated, with a drunk driver. So let's listen now to the third of our three audio clips from Governor Newsom.
The second part of what you announced today was that if you don't get vaccinated, you have to be subject to weekly COVID testing. And as you're probably aware, with Delta variants being hyper-contagious, recent studies show that it may not be enough to test just weekly. Do you think weekly testing for unvaccinated people will be enough to mitigate the spread? Are you concerned that there is a gap time here between those that remain unvaccinated, not sufficiently being tested frequently enough to catch those that may actually have the Delta variant or other incoming variants?
We are specifically concerned about that. And as a consequence, we're requiring it twice weekly in certain settings, recognizing the efficiency of transmission of the Delta virus. So you're exactly right. In congregate settings and jails, acute settings, skilled nursing facilities, that's a requirement now if you've been unvaccinated. And not only be tested now twice a week, not just once a week in those settings, but also a requirement to wear respirators, to wear the N95 masks, and other settings to wear procedure and surgical masks as well, these non-pharmaceutical interventions and addition to those weekly tests.
Okay. Now, by the way, I'm going somewhere with all of this. So if you're thinking, oh, okay, he's talking about the vaccine again, it's not for that reason. There's a bigger picture here I'm trying to draw your attention to, but it will require looking at some of these component pieces before we can get to that part. So trust me on this one. I'm going somewhere with this, and I think you're going to find it interesting, if not bothersome. So you can see the way the language is being used.
Oh, yeah. Last week, the unvaccinated were called pedophiles.
That's right.
And this week, they're being called drunk drivers. Equated. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Equated with pedophiles. That's right.
The scapegoating. I can understand vaccinated. You know, if you're vaccinated, I can understand how you'd be frustrated with someone that's unvaccinated. Because you did it. And it's like, wow, why doesn't everybody do that? I can understand that. But to equate that with being a pedophile or drunk driver is multiple steps too far.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, if they said, well, it's un-American, it's not patriotic, you're being difficult, that's one thing. But to start equating unvaccinated people with pedophiles and drunk drivers, there's a pattern going on here. And what I want to do is to draw your attention to this pattern that's emerging out of all this. Something else is happening right now that I want you to be aware of, because who knows what this is going to look like 6 months from now, much less a year from now. Now, we have to take a break. There's a few more pieces I want to put into this puzzle, and then we will, you'll see where this is heading in just a minute. Stick with me. The number is 888-914-9149. If you have not yet been vaccinated, this definitely applies to you. If you have been vaccinated and you're curious about how things are working out, this will apply to you as well. You'll see how. So stay right there. I'll be right back right after this.
You don't feel like your head is burning or anything? going to go home and lay down.
Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
All right. Yes, 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 yes. I am talking about the vaccine again. But no, I am not talking about it because I just want to talk about the vaccine. Trust me on this one. There's a reason why I'm talking about this, and it's leading up to something. And I'm not trying to make it over dramatic or anything, but I'm trying to connect a few dots here. So please stick with me on this one. So you just heard a few clips from Governor Newsom being interviewed on, I believe it was MSNBC. And he was saying, for example, too many people have chosen to live with this virus, referring to those who are unvaccinated. He says we're at a point in this epidemic, this pandemic, where individuals' choice not to get vaccinated is now impacting the rest of us in a profound and devastating and deadly way. He talked about how it will now be mandated for all state employees, also for 2 million healthcare workers. So there are 246,000 state employees in California who will be required to get vaccinated, and many of them already are, of course. At least 2 million healthcare workers in the public and private sector, according to the Associated Press. So the ground is being prepared for, in essence, a mandatory vaccination program for those who could more likely be coerced into it. And again, many people are already vaccinated, so this does not extend to everybody, but just to those who have not yet been vaccinated. We heard him using language like equating those who have not been vaccinated with drunk drivers. Cyrus, you pointed out that last week we heard some audio, and I think it was Governor Newsom, if I'm not mistaken, equating those who are not vaccinated with pedophiles. So this kind of language and rhetoric is heating up, and if people start having a steady diet, which we've had for quite some time now, of those other people over there who are causing the problem, and they're like pedophiles, and they're like drunk drivers, and they're like the dregs of humanity. After a while, don't you think that people will start looking at them that way if they haven't done so already? So a few other tidbits, and these are just disparate things. Mayor de Blasio on the other side of the country, he said yesterday that New York City employees must be vaccinated by September 13th or they will face weekly testing for COVID-19. And he says there will be very tough consequences for those who don't comply with this mask mandate for unvaccinated workers. Now, he's not talking about the average citizen of the great state of New York. He's talking about, or New York City for that matter, he's talking about those workers who fall under this rule. He says on September 13th, the entire city workforce will be mandated under the COVID safety mandate to either get vaccinated, which is far preferable, or get tested once a week. This is about our recovery. This is about keeping people safe. As is reported here by the Daily Caller, de Blasio also said that he is urging different social media platforms to block 12 individuals who one study alleges are behind most of the vaccine misinformation on social media. He says, if you don't stop the lies, then you are complicit in the spread of COVID. He said this in an interview. The New York City mayor said he chose September 13th because it is the first full day of school and that every single employee will be expected to be vaccinated by then or test weekly, adding that on Monday, the city will also be strictly enforcing the mask mandate for unvaccinated city employees. He said, let's be blunt. If you are a city employee and you're unvaccinated, you must wear a mask indoors at work. We will not tolerate any decision to do otherwise because this is about protecting people's health and well-being. He says we will, now we have a quote from Commissioner of Labor Relations, Renee Campion, who said that it would be a job requirement if you work for the city of New York in some capacity. It's a job requirement. And if you refuse the vaccine, she says, we will expect employees to comply. If employees refuse to comply, they just can't be at work. In fact, they will not be paid. Cyrus, I know I ask you this question every week or two, but remember a little over a year ago when we were discussing this and we were sort of just kind of theorizing and what might happen. And this was all still very new and things were closed and you couldn't go to church on Sunday. And you remember we were talking about where okay, you know, what if they said, well, you don't have to get a vaccine, no problem, but if you don't get a vaccine, you can't go to work, you can't go grocery shopping, you can't go to restaurants. Remember that?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, and every time I ask you the question, you give me the same answer. You thought I was crazy when I brought that up.
I wish you were. I wish I was right and you were wrong.
Me too. Me too, at least on this issue. Okay, so that's happening. American Airlines. American Airlines, this is from the New York Post. A passenger was hauled off a plane by police in New Orleans after she refused to wear a mask. This according to, as I say, the New York Post. The incident occurred on a flight that was set to depart from St. Louis to Dallas. Another passenger who was on the plane said, I've never seen anything like it before. Two armed police officers came on the plane and ordered the woman to leave after she wouldn't put on a mask, per federal law, of course. She refused and they told her to get up. She was screaming and resisting and they hauled her up and put some kind of restraints on her hands, the other passenger said. Put her hands behind her back and marched her off the plane. She kept saying she was not an animal and did not want to be treated like an animal, things like that. American Airlines confirmed that the flight was delayed and the plane was forced to return to the gate because of the incident. The woman was arrested after refusing multiple requests to get off the plane. Now, by the way, I think that's foolhardy on her part, regardless of what her motives may be. It's if the airline says, listen, if one of the rules is if you want to fly on this airplane, we require that you wear a mask. You should comply with that. You shouldn't say, hey, my rights trump your rights. They have a right to say, this is our policy and you need to wear a mask. Now, if you don't want to wear a mask, then just get a refund for your plane ticket and take a car. Because this is how serious they are. And this is happening all over the country. I shared with you last week that the number of unruly passenger arrests on commercial airlines just so far this year is over 2,000. They're taking it very seriously, and this mask mandate is, you know, it's a hair trigger thing for the flight crew. And I don't think it should be a surprise to anybody if you get on a plane and you're not going to wear a mask and they give you a hard time to the point where you're suddenly now in handcuffs. It should not come as a surprise anymore. So the last thing is, and then we're going to get where we were going this whole time. France has just issued COVID pass and vaccine rules. This is, I think, a prelude to the vaccine passport, which we're seeing in more and more countries now. France's parliament approved yesterday a law requiring special virus passes for all restaurants, domestic travel, mandating vaccination for all health workers. So this does not extend to the population at large, but to certain sectors of the population. This is from the Associated Press. Both measures have prompted protests and political tensions. President Macron said that he and his government need to protect vulnerable populations and hospitals as infections rebound to avoid lockdowns. The law requires all workers in the healthcare sector to start getting vaccinated by September the 15th or risk suspension. It also requires a health pass to enter all restaurants, trains, planes, and some other public venues. Man, this is like deja vu all over again. Initially, it applies just to adults, but will eventually apply to everyone 12 years of age and older by the end of September. To get the pass, you have to have proof that you have been fully vaccinated. You also have to recently test negative, or you can recently test negative, or you can be recovered from the virus. I'm happy to see that part in there because you rarely see any mention of those who already have the virus, or I should say have had it. Paper or digital documents will be accepted. The law says a government decree will outline how to handle vaccination documents from other countries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's more in here if you're interested in reading it, especially if you're going to France for something. Now I want to kind of tie all this together with something that's happening on the other side of the world in China. Now we've talked about this many times. This is nothing new to you, but it's going online in its fullest form very, very soon. China is this close to flipping the switch and putting every single citizen in China, and we're talking billions here, into its social credit score system. And we have some audio, which we'll play in just a minute. What we've seen developing in China has to do with behavior. And it can extend to everything from vaccinations for whatever disease. I mean, COVID-19 happens to be the most common one or the most recent one, but it could extend to other things. It could extend to things like littering, jaywalking, what you buy online, where you go online, who your friends are, do you go to church, do you know somebody who goes to church? So many aspects, indeed I would argue all aspects of life in China are now about 12 months away from them flipping the switch of every single person in China, every single, and this would extend, by the way, to foreigners, not just to Chinese citizens, but everyone in China is under this massive surveillance system, and it all ties together in this social credit system. Now, you've heard me talk about it before, but here is some audio courtesy of NBC News in which they're interviewing some people in China, so you have to listen closely. They have subtitles in the video, but obviously you can't see those. So when you hear some of the Chinese voices, they're speaking English, but you have to listen closely just to make sure you hear what they say. And this is a very recent description of what's taking place in China. And I think this is where we're headed. That's why I'm talking about all these other things, the Governor Newsom's and the scapegoating and all the other things. I think we are being prepared for something just like this. Take a listen.
Yeah, if you're unvaccinated, what is your social credit score going to be?
Way down.
All right, here we go.
Everywhere she goes, Ouyang Haoyu is followed. What she buys, how she behaves, is tracked and scored to show how responsible and trustworthy she is. It's called the social credit system, and in one version now being tested, a person's reputation is scored on a scale of 350 to 950. And Haoyu, with a good score of 752, is okay with it. In fact, most people are.
It's a mechanism like pushes you to become a better citizen.
It's big data meets Big Brother, expanding how the government monitors, understands, and ultimately controls its 1.4 billion citizens. Thanks to advances in artificial intelligence and facial recognition, and a web of more than 200 million surveillance cameras.
Are people bothered by privacy concerns?
We think a lot of cameras keep the safety. It's really good. We can accept it.
Companies are experimenting with the algorithms to help the government create the new national social credit system. The government also has pilot projects. In one, citizens are required to do hours of unpaid work to get benefits. And scores are docked for things like littering, a messy yard, gossip, even jaywalking. Video of offenders is shown on the local news. And information collectors like Zhou Aini are paid to report on their neighbors, her quota, 10 entries a month. Like the man who carried a drunk person home. A good deed, she says. Good social credit gets rewarded with perks like cheap loans and travel deals. But a bad score means public shame and worse. Huang Huijun lost a court case and didn't pay. Now he's on a government blacklist. I can't buy airplane or train tickets, he says, and the list goes on. Being discredited makes it hard to get a job or put kids in top schools. The social credit system will go nationwide next year, and few here are willing to criticize it, something that may pose a risk itself for a bad score and the life that comes with it. Janice Mackey Frere, NBC News, Beijing.
So there you have it.
That's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, back in Patrick, mm-hmm. Why would I? I'm a good person, and I follow the company line. So what do I have to worry about?
That's the thing is, who gets to define who's good, and what is good? Mm-hmm. You know, right now, if you were to talk to Governor Newsom, he would say that the people who aren't getting vaccinated they're definitely not good. They're basically pedophiles and drunk drivers. They're not good.
And us questioning his motives puts us in the bad category.
I would think so.
Yeah.
I don't know if Governor Newsom listens to this program on a regular basis, but if you do, Governor, you know, give us a call, 888-914-9149. Would love to talk to you. This was actually, in an eerie way, it was foretold in an episode of Black Mirror back in 2016. It is the episode called Nosedive. I remember watching it. I don't think I watched it that long ago. But it's this. It is a utopian, or a rather dystopian, future in which everything and everyone is controlled by their social credit score. And your social credit score can go up or down with just your daily interactions. And it was considered at the time like, oh, gosh, please, that'll never happen. And, well, it's happening. So when I said earlier today, stick with me, we're going somewhere. This is basically where I wanted to go with you, is to offer you these things to say, don't you think there may be some kind of pattern emerging here where it's not just in China? Although, I mean, I could see why certain countries might like to let China go to all the effort and all the money to perfect the system that then other countries could say, okay, well, we'll do that. But we'll let them do all the heavy lifting to get this system operational. And then we'll just simply emulate it. I mean, you know what it's like right now. You can't hardly go anywhere here in the United States, in any public place at least, when you're not on video. And you already know about facial recognition camera systems and the databases that are there for people to be tracked in real time just based upon their facial recognition. I mean, your face has already been scraped from Facebook and your driver's license records and all the other ways in which your pictures may be out there, that's already been scraped and stored and classified and indexed. And so in order to flip a switch at some point, if there isn't one already flipped, in which people can be monitored that way, and for what purpose and to whose benefit? Is it really to your benefit to be that surveilled on a daily basis? Is it really to your benefit to have such massive and intrusive government involvement in the day-to-day details of your life? I mean, thankfully, we are nowhere near, at least not yet anyway, how bad things have gotten in China. But things are looking to me as though they're moving in that direction faster than we might realize. So that's the purpose of this little segment here, so that you can see a few things emerging in what I regard to be a pattern. I'd love to talk to you about this or anything else. The number is 888-914-9149. And I'll just, in case anybody wants to mention this, I'll mention it first. Is there some connection with the Book of Revelation where it talks about people being given a mark? I mean, what would happen in China if they said, you know, this is really cool and everything, but, you know, it would be so much easier and you wouldn't have to worry about dragging your phone around or, you know, all these cumbersome documents and QR codes and things. So what we're going to do is, because your social credit score is all tied to all of your activities, just to make it easy, we're just going to give everyone a mark. It'll be invisible. You won't even know it's there. You'll never even see it. Nobody will see it. But when you walk into a restaurant, you get scanned. Problem solved. If you walk into a grocery store, you want to go do something else, you get scanned and everything proceeds sufficiently and everything's great. But, you know, if it doesn't scan you, you know, two policemen step out of the shadows and say, excuse me, come with us. We want to find out why you haven't been scanned yet. And you can't eat here. I'm sorry, because you haven't been scanned. I used to think that that was so outlandish and next to impossible, but I don't think so anymore. I really don't think so anymore. I'll be right back with more right after this.
Real life solutions you can believe in. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
My number is 888-914-9149. Carlos on Twitter just asked me, he says, Patrick, why are the vaccinated so concerned with the unvaccinated when they are immune from them? What happened to my body, my choice? Well, two interesting points there, Carlos. My body, my choice. Yeah, we heard that endlessly on the abortion issue. And they will still say that on the abortion issue, but it certainly does not apply to you when it comes to this issue. And there's a breakdown in their logic there as well, just to point this out. If somebody says, my body, my choice, and you say, well, wait a minute, it's not just your body, it's somebody else's body. And they say, no, my body, my choice. And in this case, if you say, my body, my choice, when it comes to the vaccine, they say, no, you have no choice because you're potentially harming other people. They're making the very same argument with regard to the vaccine that you're making with regard to abortion, and they're blind to it. It's the same argument. It's the same difference, so to speak.
The truth shall set you free.
I don't know what that is. Put a red line through that, Cyrus. Don't play that one anymore. In other words, it is a way of arguing that you are obliged to do this because if you don't do it, you're harming somebody else. And in essence, it's the same argument with regard to abortion. So point that out. Let's go to, let's start off with Helen in Concord, Massachusetts. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning. My question is, just listening to this NBC clip, how is the church not in complete outrage over this? This is part of this. I called you before about the nano dot dye and the artificial intelligence. This is completely what, when people are real Bible thumpers, are looking at Book of Revelations here. This is exactly what it is. This is what's playing out. It's and you quoted Timothy yesterday. I mean, where's the outrage? Where is the outrage here? This is not about a Delta strain. This is about constraining our lives. This is about keeping us, and you talk about pro-life issues and, you know, what do you think? This technology is going to not interfere with people's right to have children and whatnot?
Of course it will. And China's already got a gold medal when it comes to that, in forcing people to have abortions if they have more than the prescribed number of children. Well, here's a thought, Helen. In the last several years, the Vatican, the Holy See, entered into a concordat with the communist Chinese government. And you can read it. It's available in multiple languages, including Chinese, on the government website. On the Vatican website. That was not an intentional. I wasn't making a joke there. It was an unintentional slip of the tongue. But it's available there. Yeah. And it, in essence, it ceded control of the church in China to the Chinese communist government. Now, if the Holy See is willing to do that, it makes one wonder why perhaps you don't hear more outcry, because I think the reason is because whether or not there's sympathy to this, I don't know, but there's already a kind of collaboration going on that, to my mind, is the opposite of what we should be doing. We should be resisting this and speaking out against it rather than cooperating with it. So that's my theory as to why you don't hear something, why you don't see pushback in the way that I think you're describing.
We're watching is completely, even our country, our constitution, our rights, our voices as Catholics. If people don't wake up, we're just headed to a very bad place. This is not my
back. Well, I'm awake and you're awake, and I believe there are many other people who are awake. The problem is it too late now to do anything about it? And my sense is, I think it probably is. I think it probably is.
Well, I hope that my fellow Catholics will respect my rights to choose that I don't want this vaccine. I don't want it in my children. I don't trust it. And that's why I don't want it.
Okay, fair enough. And I'm not here to, you know, I'm not here to push you one way or the other. I'm just saying that looking at the pattern that we're seeing emerge here, Governor Newsom and Mayor de Blasio and American Airlines, and there's a kind of a coalescence of things moving in the direction of people like you, and it's going to put the hurt on people like you. It's already starting to put the hurt on people like you right now, and I think the hurt is just going to get bigger and bigger, and many people like you eventually, Helen, would just throw in the towel and just say, all right, this is too exhausting and too painful. I'm not going to do it anymore. Go ahead and give me the shot. I think that's what many people will do. But beyond that, though, I see the issue of the vaccine is just part of a bigger picture. It's not the end game. The vaccine is not, to my mind, it's not the end game. This is something part of a bigger picture. And I think what we're seeing in China is where this is all headed, to something equivalent here.
Yes. Well, I hope the church will speak out and protect those of people like myself who aren't buying it.
Well, God bless you and your family. I do pray for all of you, and I hope you'll pray for me. 888-914-9149. Thank you, Helen. Let's go to Joe now in Minneapolis. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This kind of plays right in with your last caller. I'm interested in your thoughts on... I see the parallels with Revelation. They're undeniable. I don't know whether it's that or not, but I'm interested in your thoughts on who's driving it, why, and, you know, what the ultimate goal is. And I have some thoughts on that, too, but I'd like to hear what your
I can only conjecture, and so my conjecture would include people like Bill Gates, who is super wealthy. I mean, we all know that, but that kind of wealth can buy you many things, including governmental compliance in certain areas. Now, he's been for a long time on the record of wanting to reduce the population of the planet, get rid of more, as he would consider it, excessive people. And he's already been involved in some campaigns, for example, in Africa, where it was feared, and then I think it was demonstrated, that there were some sterilization agents that were used in some of the immunization campaigns. And by the way, I want to make sure that you understand, I'm not saying that the COVID-19 vaccine is a depopulation vaccine. I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is that who would like to see something like this? I think people like Bill Gates would like to see it because he's already said that he'd like to see it. He'd like to see people not having any more children. And we know that he has had some involvement in funding projects in Africa, for example, that have done that. And it's well documented. Obinuju Ekocha, she is an expert on this issue. She herself is a scientist and she hails from Nigeria. She lives in England now. And she has heavily documented this, and it's in her book called Target Africa, for those who are interested in looking at it. So I could imagine somebody like him. I could imagine people in the government who are left-wing, which is at the current administration is very left-wing, who would like to see more control exerted. I saw a story yesterday. It's interesting that I think the figure was like 6.8 million people who have come into the country illegally in the last, let's say, I don't know, year or so, that the federal government is looking at a way to fast track them into citizenship very quickly. And I haven't seen any indication whether or not the people in question there have been fully vaccinated. And so it makes me wonder, you know, what's the purpose for wanting to do that? Well, I think the easy answer is because they would wind up voting for the party that made this happen for them. You know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. I have some reporting I want to get to here in just a minute about guaranteed income. And not just guaranteed income, but healthcare and other things, all of which I love income, I love healthcare, I love, you know, all of those things. But there's a push here, and I'll get to this in a little while, but there's a push here to make this available for people on a widespread basis. And I think that the connection here is that if we do this for you, then you really don't want to vote us out of office, do you? Because if you vote us out of office, then all those perks go away. So whether it's a political motive or a global population motive or a financial motive in the case of those who could make a lot of money, I think that there are many different kinds of people or organizations that would have a vested interest in seeing things continue in this direction. So off the cuff, Joe, those are a few thoughts of my own.
Got it. Yeah, that's exactly my thought. Is it maybe isn't even a disconnected conglomeration of forces and movements and, you know, people that want power, people that want money, people that want control, but they're all sort of coming together and pushing us toward this Chinese model where all that's possible.
Well, I don't think it's any surprise that we're at the same time that these things are happening, we're also seeing the rise of a muscular new form of Marxism in this country. Some of it's naked Marxism. It's obviously politically Marxism, and some of it is masquerading as anti-racism and other things like that, which really is another form of Marxism. That doesn't seem to be. I remember now, Joe, you and I may be the same age. I don't know, maybe you're younger than me. But do you remember when the Soviet Union fell? I think it fell officially in 1991 or between 90 and 91. And I remember being.
I do.
Do you remember the kind of odd stories that would come out where like former Soviet people were quoted saying, don't worry, we're not gone. We're just changing our name. We're going to come back. We'll continue our project. And I just used to laugh those things off then, like, you know, you guys are losers, go away. But now, as I look back on it, it makes me wonder.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember Gorbachev, there was some quote about him letting these satellite countries go so he could reconsolidate power in Mother Russia to make another charge at it later, you know, that kind of notion.
Maybe. And I don't know if this is in any way connected to Russia per se, but it certainly is connected to communism. I see that. I see communist fingerprints all over this.
Yeah, right.
All right, Joe.
Well, thank you, Patrick. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. 888-914-9149. Probably no time to go to a call right now, so we'll kind of ride this wave for a minute. Real quick, though, I want to share with you a story. I thought that was cool. There's an entrepreneur and an evangelist who are planning a pro-life bank. It's a financial institution that will serve as an alternative to mainstream commercial banks, many of which, most of which, donate heavily to Planned Parenthood. Vucicic, an Australian-American born without four limbs due to a rare genetic condition, believes that he has a unique opportunity to help on issues like abortion, adoption, and foster care. So he's pointing out that, like, Bank of America's charitable foundation gave over $50,000 to Planned Parenthood affiliates across the country. And when I return, I'll tell you what he is planning to do to push back in the opposite direction. I think it's really a great idea. That and your phone calls and plenty more ahead, including some homeschooling news. I've got some homeschooling news, and even if you're not a homeschooler, you might want to pay attention to this one because it could affect you in ways that you might not expect. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. I'll be right back.